all this time, Porter. Everything you've done, everything you've said, I've heard all about. So you've made some remarks in the past about when is Papa Fritz going to be here. Papa Fritz is here.
The podcast that covers world-class championship wrestling. I'm Pete, and I'm with Johnny and Kelly. Johnny, man, how you doing?
Doing good.
Kelly, brother, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, brother.
Yeah, man, we are looking at world-class championship wrestling, episode number 72, which is May 14th, 1983. The unique thing about this episode, boys, no Von Erichs in sight, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That they're sucks. Showing, and this is a pretty fun show. I don't want to say it was a great show, but it had some good angles. But it was headlined by Buddy Roberts and Iceman Parsons, but it's kind of showing that this promotion has more going for it than just the family, huh? What do you think, Kelly?
Yeah, totally. Well, I think Carrie's been in Japan quite a bit, and in other territories too, because he was in demand. And I'm not sure about Kevin and David, but yeah, no, you don't need them on TV every week for sure. They're deep. It's funny because in 1982 they were the opposite of deep,
exactly.
Now suddenly they have some talent.
Exactly. You used to have them on in every show because what else did you have? And now they're at a point where, we got the Freebirds. They don't just have to wrestle the Von Erichs. There's three of them. We've got Iceman Parsons, and he's already a huge star, and they can lean on Iceman. And Chris Adams is starting. So
Chris Adams starting. Jimmy Garvin is establishing.
Jimmy Garvin yeah. too. Yeah.
And they're
Kamala.
Also, yeah. Kamala, yeah. They're establishing Devastation Inc. They're building them up. So it's just showing that they don't have to. You know, when they don't have Von Erichs, don't need to be in on the show. They can spread the wealth, and because they have enough acts that are over to carry a you can honestly put together a decent card without a Von Erich on it. Not saying that's the smart move, because it's not. Because they're still the straw that stirs the drink. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, the Freebirds definitely put a big influence on the territory and made it a hot territory. And then these other acts, because they're getting the rub by being in the promotion with the Freebirds, and they're booking them well, that they're getting over. Iceman being the first one, Jimmy Garvin, Chris Adams to a lesser extent, and Devastation Inc. So happy days are here again in world-class championship wrestling, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's been pretty sad, I think, since with Fritz's retirement, and hasn't been a hot territory since the 70s or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, a decade, probably.
Yeah.
Early 70s.
Yeah, I mean, and it had something to do with probably having Wahoo and Johnny Valentine feuding, along with Fritz. But hey. It opens up with Jimmy Garvin, Jimmy Jam Garvin. This is, now, Kelly, let me start this with Johnny, because I know Johnny's watched a lot of Garvin in watched some in World Class, and saw a lot of him in
Crockett.
You know, he was in the AWA. Is World Class Championship Wrestling, because I'll say it, is the best incarnation of Jimmy Garvin that is out there?
Yes, overall. However, since you brought it up, it's something I was going to bring up. I have a personal fondness, though, for the babyface turn Jimmy Garvin against the Midnight Express.
A great angle.
Because this is one of those fortuitous things. I watched it on TV, or it ended worldwide. They showed the footage of it, and you know, oh my
great
god,
great angle, yep.
Yeah, Jimmy Garvin runs out that night. Wolfman and I and so we're going to the Civic Center, and it was supposed to be Ronnie Garvin and Wahoo versus the Midnight Express, and the Midnight Express had stolen the U.S. tag team belts. You know, they were wearing them, but they weren't theirs. And Wahoo comes out. We assume it's going to be, you know, oh, it'll just be a one-on-one match. And all of a sudden, sharp-dressed man starts blaring. And he comes running out and cleans house. And the Philadelphia Civic Center exploded. The roof came off the place. And we were part of it. So I'm partial to that. And that didn't last very long because then it got into the weird flair shit. But, you know, I'm partial to that moment. But, yes, overall, World Class is the best version.
Yeah, I mean, that was a hot angle at the time. NWA, Crockett, they didn't weren't doing fireball angles and stuff. And so it was a unique way and a cool way to take out Ronnie, you know, and then Jimmy coming out and that big locker room brawl. I mean, that's a fantastic angle in World Class. I mean, in Crockett. What about you, Kelly? Do you think this is the best incarnation of Jimmy Garvin? We know Kelly has some, I mean, Johnny has some, you know, some emotional ties to it.
Yeah, I mean, I read about that stuff in Crockett. I've seen maybe little bits, but not much. This version of Garvin, I think, is the one. It's definitely the one that stood the test of time. He was probably more involved in more, you know, high impact or important feuds and matches. Yeah, in well, world
that was
class.
My initial impression of him from reading about him first was that, look, this guy must be a huge deal. He's feuding with this Rick Martel, who's the AWA world champion. So I was immediately, he was elevated in my eyes from the magazines.
Yeah. Yeah. And his AWA run, he was a main eventer the whole time, but AWA was a different territory that didn't do angles very often. And, you know, so
and he needed
didn't
his angles. I mean, His work is solid, don't get me wrong, and good in spots, but it's not something that he can go into the AWA, which would traditionally, I mean, they had some brawling, don't get me wrong, but there was a lot of mat wrestling in the AWA with Martel and Bockwinkel, Vern Gagne, other champions, and then Jimmy Garvin. Yeah, he has the background of what Vern wanted in his guys as being an amateur wrestler. But it didn't translate into that gimmick of what he was doing, you know?
Yeah. I think Ken Mantell, the Candyman, must have held Garvin in pretty high regard, the Booker. Because Garvin's been a constant focus since he came into the territory. It's just been a continuing story.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot still to come.
Yeah, right now we're just Garvin's with the David Von Erich game.
Yeah, we barely even got started.
He works Kevin really well in a great feud, and then, of course, the Chris Adams, and then it goes into the valets, which is into legendary, as in being like the second hottest act in the company type thing.
And Pete, can I just say one more thing before we get to the match? We must have had some weird Vulcan mind meld thing going on, because I made a point in my notes to go try to start a deep discussion about Jimmy Garvin and where each guy first experienced them, and mention the Philadelphia Civic Center story was in my notes, and you did it. I was like, whoa, dude, get out of my head, bro.
Hey, baby, it's that Piote.
Oofa.
Well, we open up, boys, with Jimmy Garvin versus Mike Bond. I mean, other than having the worst fucking finish ever to a squash,
what
man.
The fuck, dude? He clotheslined him in the elbow or in the side of the elbow and pinned him. It was
I didn't even know that. I called it a shoulder block. So
it was a little bit of both, kind of.
Yeah, it's an amalgamation of both doing two moves shittily.
Yeah, exactly.
What did you make of this fucking thing? This thing, Kelly, with that finish? I mean, we had to be like, what the fuck is this finish?
Well, these guys are
brainbuster, you know.
Yeah, these guys are married to each other, kind of, because remember the State Fair show? This was a match where Bond was completely emasculated by Jimmy Garvin, where Garvin was pulling him up at two about three or four times. So, yeah, did we really need to see this again? Well, it wasn't very long. I mean, hey, I'm glad I'm seeing more Jimmy Garvin. I'm glad I'm seeing more Sunshine. I know
they totally have the star power, you know?
Yeah. I know I'm the lone voice praising Sunshine for some reason, but anyway.
No, you're not. Don't be a martyr. we all just...
I like Jimmy and
really? I thought I got shouted hard, down.
No. I like Jimmy and Sunshine more than I like Jimmy and Precious.
And I just said I like Jimmy and Precious better because I was first introduced to this when I was 14 years old, and I saw the two of them, and I was like, Precious is hotter. That's it.
Okay. Well, Sunshine's friggin' hot. Great act, and we've established that. It's basically Savage and Elizabeth in so many ways, right? Similar
before Savage and Elizabeth.
Yeah, before Savage. Though Sunshine's, of course, more heelish.
Yeah.
But apparently, when they brought Elizabeth in to the WWF, the idea was for her to be more like Sunshine at first.
She was going
to
screw over the baby faces and contract.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and be more of a heel. But it just I guess they decided, oh no, she's better to just.
They did the Beauty and the Beast thing.
Yeah,
No one would believe a beautiful young girl like that could be evil. Look at her.
Yeah. Yeah, of course it worked out way better that way, it was kind of inspired by Garvin and Sunshine.
I'm sure, but look at when she became a heel in the when Elizabeth became a heel in the NWO, it sucked. She was a terrible heel.
She was just eye candy. I mean, to be honest, you know, she looked hot standing in all that black gimmick.
She was good with the whole like. Well, Savage is such a creep because, look, his manager is so sweet and nice, you know, and he's hiding behind her and everything. So it was a way to play to her just sort of just being eye candy.
It worked with Savage when she was, you know, the baby face and he was the heel.
Only with Savage. When they tried to pair, she was with Flair for a while.
It was bad. It was magic in a bottle or lightning in a bottle, with Savage and Elizabeth. That was the perfect pairing.
You know who's not lightning in a bottle? Mike Bond.
No, he's good Lord. Dear Lord, he stinks. And we're going to see, I'm sure, a lot more of him because I know he's in the territory forever. And let's see. So this match wasn't much. Mercer hypes the upcoming Star Wars card. That's coming up June or maybe even July.
It's very international.
July. Oh, so it's a July 4th one. Okay. International flavor with Giant Baba.
Giant Baba. Really? Did that happen?
Yes, it does. I won't spoil it. I may have mentioned it on an earlier show, but I do know who Baba wrestles on the Star Wars card coming up.
And it has the bit one that I think has the most legendary, Freebird Von Erich match, six man on that card.
I just didn't know whether to believe it. These people are always promising people are coming.
Oh, yeah, I know.
That don't show up. I'm just like, Giant Baba? Really?
Okay. Well, the funny thing is, I think one of the guys that was promised, Fishman, actually will turn up on this upcoming Star Wars card.
Oh, eventually.
I did glance over the card. And I think Fishman is actually.
Yeah, part of that is because Chris Adams liked working with a lot of luchadors.
Mm.
Yeah, but no Dizzy Hogan still.
No.
And you know, when you bring up Mike Bond, Kelly, you know, a lot of people don't realize he wasn't just a jobber. He was a jobber, but he was actually a full-time jobber in the territory.
Yeah.
And a lot of these guys. There was the jobbers who went around, but like in some of the southern territories, these jobbers were full-time jobbers.
Oh yeah, he's a full-time jobber, totally. But geez,
you have Mike Bond here, but like in the, like Crockett, you have like Gene Ligon and
right, and of course WWF had a ton of guys that were full-time essentially as jobbers. It's just a sad life. Yeah. Especially when you're on TV every week and, you know, you can't hide your job.
And a lot of these cards where they do seven matches and then there'll be two or three of these jobber matches underneath, man.
Well, but at least in WWF, you could blend in amongst all the other jobbers. You know, there's a lot of them. There's a whole clique of them, you know, a ton of them. And here, it's Mike Bond. He's kind of, even the that other guy. That other
Mike Greed.
Yeah, that guy. That's it.
Just guy's name, Mike.
Speaking of Mikes, two Mike Lorenzes back, just had to mention.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, same emasculation in here in this match. Bond gets pulled up at two multiple times. Sloppy finish, like you guys mentioned right at the beginning. It was a botched clothesline.
That'd be nice by calling it sloppy.
Yeah, well, it happens. I mean, I don't know why he went for the pin right after it, but anyway.
Why didn't he pick him up again?
Yeah, anyway.
I don't care. It ended the match. That's all I care about.
Exactly, yeah. Let's hope it's not. There's not another Garvin versus Bond match too soon. I'm sure there will be another one, but
Johnny, do you want to add any gasoline on this match?
I already threw all my gasoline in, except for one other thing. As we're not, because here, and we'll see it again. He starts off this piece of shit match he's issuing a public challenge to David Von Erich for any type of match he wants. So that's the only important thing that happened in this match.
And that leads us into tea time with Chris Adams. And these are like kind of like precursors to what the WWE did later on with like Jim Ross with Mankind and Goldust, little character pieces. WWE, of course, you know, they did them a little differently, obviously.
Yeah.
But they were trying to get it into the character, get behind what they're about. Well, tell us what's going on here, John.
Well, Pete, see, but the difference is the WWE, if they were filming it and an airplane took off in the middle of it, they say cut and film again. Oh, no, not one take Bill Mercer, because I saw his name in the credits as one of the executive producers, so I'm just blaming him for it. But he did say, Chris Adams, he's like, you know, I'm 5 years in. I was like, he's really? He's only 5 years in? I didn't know that. I thought he had more years under his belt at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think 78 was when he started.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, that's 5 years.
Okay, and apparently Bill brought the tea. Bill was providing the tea and asks Chris, he's like, is it to your satisfaction? And I just wanted heel Chris Adams to come out. No, it's bloody lifting. Fuck you, you know. But no, he's like, no, it's quite nice. And he starts talking about where he's been everywhere, and he won the light heavyweight title from
Paraguay.
Thank you. I didn't want to fuck it up. Start talking about, do you know the Guerreros? And then the plane takes off, dying. And when it's done, we're back to talking about the Mongol. He's like, oh, the Mongol is bad. I can't even tell you what he did to me in Germany. I was like, I don't think I want to know either. Did it involve shit? And then just brings it back to, I love this. I adored it with the bloopers and the plane and everything and all, but he's still talking about the fucking Mongol and Bill, he's like, well, we look forward to future combats with you. I'm like, oh, he sucks. And then there's the tracking shot out of the piece to the music is an extremely long shot of them pouring tea. Way too long was the camera on the teapot. But, I love it when everything is all fucked up and terrible, but I appreciate them trying to, because people weren't really trying this that much back then. Hey, let's go out in the middle.
It's total state of the art. Look at it.
Yep.
They're combining shoot and work, where they're talking about his actual background and their work. I'm talking about the damn Mongol in it.
Yeah. But then they're going out doing this guerrilla filming and doing whatever they do to got to get footage, permission to shoot out at the water park or wherever, the airport, apparently. Wherever. I mean, that's something when you watch the TV at this time, there wasn't any of that, really. Maybe in Memphis there was.
Not like this, I don't think.
Yeah, but at least something close to it. But this is them trying something that hasn't really been done with these live location shoots. So even when shit fucks up and it's goofy, I love it.
Yeah, I mean, this is good. I enjoy it. Again, I like how they combine the shoot and work aspect of it. He in this segment, the Von Erichs really kind of get the dusty treatment from Crockett, where they always they'd always say the rumor always was that when Dusty was booking that they'd always have to mention Dusty somehow in his friends and people's promos. And here we got a big old mouthful of Von Erich talk here. What'd you make of it, Kelly, man?
Yeah, I mean it's so true. This was innovative. But looking at it from modern eyes, yeah, you notice the screw ups and the airplane going over those. Yeah, it's so funny. But they probably were.
I thought the airplane kind of added to it, the charm.
Of a kind of, you know, wrestle crappy moment.
This is supposed to be a gentlemanly tea time. And there's an airplane taking.
Yeah. It was just too loud. It was hilarious.
They only gave us 5 minutes. That's it.
Yeah, no, obviously they weren't going to do a second take because you would have because you couldn't hear what they were saying. Adams is still kind of nervous as a promo, too. He probably hadn't had too much experience on the mic before.
I'm pretty sure he was pretty nervous after, even when he became a heel. It was Gino carrying those promos.
Well, at first it was Gary Hart carrying the promo.
Yeah, and at first it was Gary Hart. Yeah, I never really thought he became a great promo. But he became one of those promos where he was good enough eventually.
Yeah, and as we'll see, he's over with the fans through his ring work and his charisma as a babyface. So really, he's got enough to carry him. He doesn't need the promos necessarily.
He grows out of that this ugly ass haircut he has.
Yes, that was another note I made. His hair starting to look more normal and not of course he lost a hair match, so it looked like he lost a hair match.
Yeah,
it doesn't really look like that anymore. So that's a plus too.
That's gotta be tough when you're like a blowjob babyface and you're going into new territory with a.
Exactly. Think about that. Is that the only time I've ever heard of anything like that happening? Going okay. Because usually the loser of a loser leaves town, you know, a haircut match who has to leave, was the heel, right? So Adams must have been the heel. Mm-hmm. So he's, you're our hot young baby face, and we're not even going to mention why you're fucking bald. You know, that's so weird. And then he has to do the character switch.
But he wasn't a heel in Portland, I don't think.
Oh, he was a
baby face.
So wait, he was a baby face who lost a hair match and then left town?
Probably lost to Buddy Rose, I guarantee it.
No, it was actually Rip Oliver.
Oh, the other's a Rip? Okay.
Yeah, but they both did the same gimmick where they would beat, multiple baby faces for their hair to make the heat hotter and hotter for when they finally got their head shaved.
Okay. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So that was just Portland. Portland was they did more hair matches than Mexican promotions.
Buddy wore that damn mask. He did the Kurt Angle gimmick before Kurt Angle did the Buddy gimmick before Buddy Roberts.
Yeah, like then and like Oliver coming in doing the same thing, and but it was a super successful gimmick.
And that leads us into Chris Adams versus Paul Vachon. All right, Kelly, who is this Vachon? Is he real part of the lineage?
Of course, yeah. Well, this is Butcher Vachon. But they don't call him Butcher Vachon here.
No, Pete, I did the same thing. I, for some reason, just calling him Paul Vachon, I thought the same thing. I went, who the fuck is Paul Vachon? You know, and because I didn't look like him, but then later I'm like, oh, that's Butcher Vachon. I didn't even realize it.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, yeah, they didn't even use his gimmick name. Weird.
I did the exact same thing. I wrote a paragraph of stuff about a possible fake Vachon, and then I had to throw it away.
It is random. I mean, he is definitely like the lesser of the Vachons as far as being a legend in wrestling. But still, he was pretty well known. And him and Mad Dog teamed quite a bit in several different territories.
And wasn't he the one they had the wedding for on TNT?
Yes,
Right.
But here, this appears to be his only appearance in World Class. The next few weeks. Apparently, he was in the territory for like 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay, but, he was there for like someone's wedding.
But he was never in the territory before, and he would never be in the territory after.
Wasn't definitely. They weren't using him as a key piece or an angle or anything.
Yeah, no. And
AOB duty.
Yeah, looking at the results, he wasn't wrestling much at all at this point. He would, he would go to the WWF later in 1983, and then be there for a good year plus as a regular, but he hadn't really done much in the 80s prior to this. He was a businessman. He was the promoter in Montreal. He Mad Dog was the star. Paul was the brains behind everything and the money guy when it came to promoting.
But didn't, and excuse me if I'm stepping on you this because I went and looked up a little bit too, didn't he run for public office or something quite a few times or
something? He
became a Canadian politician.
Maybe. Yeah, he was definitely out of wrestling and then got brought, you know, came back. I guess maybe he needed to get back into it, get making money again or something. I don't know. Anyway, I'm not sure the whole story, but yes, random. We've had a few random guys turn up in our watch of world class so far, and Butcher's another one. And yeah, here, well, he's just here to put Chris Adams over. And, you know, he looks totally like a man at a time. So totally Mr. 70s wrestler here. This was awkward. Giant
head, yeah.
Yeah. They'd never worked together before.
He was the original. I'm gonna date Johnny on a reference. Okay. He was the original meathead.
Like Rob Ryder?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
All in the family.
Totally.
Jeez, but you look at you. You with your Vachon hair there.
So yeah, it was an awkward match, but you know it wasn't too long. And Inziguri was what put Vachon away, but it was boring, very boring.
Yeah, I was just taken aback that I mean, Mike said that I'm looking at Paul Vachon on my fucking screen. in enhancement talent, Tootie. Johnny, what do you think about this, man?
So, let me just say, okay, so let's go with some Mercer shit when he's describing Paul Vachon. Does Bill Mercer mention Paul Vachon from the legendary wrestling family of the Mad Dog Vachon and Vivian Vachon? Oh, he'll get to it later after Fritz tells him to. No, he starts with, oh, look at Vachon. He pronounces Vachon like stuck-up people pronounce mozzarella. Like, oh, yes, can I have some mozzarella? They're like, shut up. Vachon, it's not how you say it. You know, no wrestling announcer pronounces it like that. You stink. And he says that Paul Vachon, he looks like he's from a, I don't know, a French or rural novel, perhaps a distinguished agriculturist. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? And then there's a pause, and then he brings up Mad Dog and Vivian, and I'm still picturing Fritz just screaming at him, no, say this. Just, he's terrible.
So you're imagining Vince yes. In the Vince role and
somehow or another, yes.
At the gorilla position yelling at the commentator.
It's, okay. You know, it's just another thing. It's just another thing that Vince McMahon stole from Fritz Von Erich. And the only other thing is, Vachon has this little thing he does when he kicks Chris Adams or punches him. He yells, boom! Like, oh boy, this stunk.
At least he wasn't slapping his thigh all the time.
Well, then we get this pretty hot angle.
Oh boy, do we?
With Kamala and Jose Lothario, Kelly. Mm-hmm. What? Tell us, break it down for us, man. Break it down.
Yeah, well, I was looking forward to, you know, a really crazy brawl between the two of them. But what we got was still good. We get all camo gear Friday, which is the rare Friday.
Yeah,
that's the one you had to.
That's worth $10 as opposed to normal.
Exactly. That That's the one they wouldn't sell in stores. You had to send away special for it. Receive it in the mail.
Yeah. More rare than Boba Fett.
Oh, the Boba Fett that has the little thing.
The rocket
out.
Launcher.
Yeah.
Now we're getting Kamala is a cannibal.
Oh, yes. Boy, do we.
It's brought up so casually by Mercer. Kamala, he may be cannibalistic, but he doesn't say it in any way that's shocking or anything.
Oh, he says, there's word around that this man perhaps could be cannibalistic.
It's so matter of fact, saying, he just, prefers to eat people instead of hot dogs.
Who am I to judge? It's another culture.
So it started off cool because Jose was using his great psychology, ducking away from dodging Kamala's attacks and all that. But, this didn't go too long. The crowd was into it really, really hot. They're into Kamala as an act. He's gotten over huge. They've really booked him really well. And then Kamala started to bite Jose. Blood starts to flow. Yeah, he's basically eating Jose here. And David Manning doesn't waste any time. He calls for the bell immediately. Throws the match out. Kamala's a cannibal. And then we get Chris Adams making the save, though. He's basically the only baby face in the arena. The only one who bothers to come and make saves anyway.
Iceman was just rage at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Mike Bond. What's Mike Bond gonna do?
Kamala was DQ'd for trying to eat Jose. That's basically the ruling. Because, wrestlers bite other wrestlers all the time, and there's no disqualifications. But here, this was, I don't know. It was great as far as Jose drawing blood and making Kamala look like a monster. Crazy
Jose,
stuff.
I mean, really is the MVP here. I mean, he made Kamala look like a monster. I love Kamala coming through the side door. I thought that was cool as fuck. Clearly, the idea for the original Kamala character was to be an Abdullah the Butcher. Clearly, they do not stay on that course of course. Because he doesn't. This is probably about the only bloody I think he probably draws his whole entire tenure here. That might be an exaggeration, but they play up more of the. He's a savage who doesn't know the wrestling rules. That's what he ends up morphing into, as opposed to the vicious cannibal.
Yum.
I think the vicious cannibal had more legs as a money act for him. But when you're being positioned underneath the Freebirds, it's hard to do that, do the cannibal gimmick. Because ultimately, to draw money, he's got to be working. And he ends up working them, but he's got to be in a feature act against, like, Kerry or David. And he does work those guys later on, but it was never, for the most part, never on top. It might be second or third from the top because the Freebirds always had that the main event positions laced up with other Von Erich. So it ended up it was just the wrong time for Kamala, because I think Kamala was one of the most underrated draws in the history of wrestling, because the dude drew big money with JYD and Butch Reed and Hogan. Drew money against I think I said JYD and host drew money against Andre and he drew money, he ended up drew decent money with Kerry and David but not to the extent he could have been. I know he drew money against Dick Murdoch in the South. The guy when in Mid-South they protected more of the viciousness gimmick, and in World Class they played it up a little bit more for the comedy act and stuff. Johnny,
One thing is over the top. as the character is, it's more real than most characters, right? Or it seems more real.
Oh yeah, because Kamala,
he's very believable.
He lived the gimmick. He believed in the gimmick. The patting of the belly always got a reaction.
Eating Jose.
The spear and the mask and the whole act always worked. And Skandar Akbar was a great manager for him.
Oh, so you have to excuse me for a second because it just hit me. And I was like, I spend my time talking about a business where there's cannibal gimmicks. It talks, you know, well, they just did, you know, it wasn't really the right time for a cannibal gimmick. I'm like, this is so crazy. When you think about it, it's now granted, yes, I'm sure little kids be scared to death of this. And he is, for every reason you say. But like, it's a cannibal gimmick. I wrote down, like, this is awesome and racist at the same time, and I don't know how to feel about it. Because Jose's amazing here, being the meal. You know, he's great at everything, including being a meal. Dude, Kamala bit into Jose. It was like, yummy, yummy, yummy. All he tasted Jose's spicy.
Insert your Bobby Heenan burrito joke here.
I was saying, you got it, buddy. You insert, he tasted that spicy Latin blood, and he was just all he just wanted was some sour cream and shredded cheese, and just go to town on that yummy, yummy, yum. And got me thinking about the cannibal gimmick and who Kamala might like to eat. Oh, by the way, this was Bill's call, actually. It was, there have been hints that this man has been cannibalistic, but can he face a mover and shaker like Jose Lothario?
Yes.
That's... what? So who else would he like to eat? Now, you think about the Von Erichs. Which of the Von Erichs would be the most appetizing, I think, to Kamala. Kevin's out of it. Way too stringy. Just way too stringy. Nothing but muscle and stringy. Carrie's all muscle, you know. Maybe his ass. He's got a nice ass. Nice ass. Kamala might take a chunk out of that. So I think David looks like lunch. He's next lunch. I enjoyed the fuck out of this, but when they just laid into it, it's not just, we've seen vicious heels bite wounds and like it all the time, you know, but when you add in he's a cannibal, no, I'm sorry, they're not screaming he's a cannibal, like, oh, look at that, he's a cannibal. It's crazy, it's bonkers.
And that transitions us into the main event.
Actually, WorldCast is a member of the Pro Wrestling Only podcast family. Check out ProWrestlingOnly.com for other podcasts, match reviews, features and retrospectives, reviews of wrestling books, video games, and more, all at ProWrestlingOnly.com. Are you tired of wrestling Twitter? Then maybe message boards are your thing. Sign up at the PWO forums. I know that our listeners aren't negative Nellies. You're all positive Patties. Bring that positivity to the PWO boards by signing up now. There's a shit ton of threads for you to check out and have fun and participate in. From the good old days to last night's Royal Rumble, it's all there at the PWO forums. So remember, kids, check out PWO.com and the PWO forums for all your wrestling needs. And speaking of the PWO podcast family, what's coming up next, Kelly?
Well, we have a few shows that I want to touch on. Firstly, Greetings from Allentown with Peter Winston hit the big 100 last week. Yeah.
Hey.
Hardest working man in podcasting. I think he's only missed one week in this run. It's pretty impressive. Number 100 looked at WWF Raw from June 1st, 1998, which was right when things were totally, you know, on fire for the WWF. Finally, eclipsing Nitro. This was all about, you know, Mick Foley, Austin, of course, Kane, Taker, Nation of Domination, The Rock, EX, basically the peak before it all got really silly and stupid in the coming years.
It's one of I'm unapologetic about this little area here of 98. One of my favorite things ever. I'm not going to go, you know, I still enjoy it. It was a very exciting time.
Yeah. I look back on it pretty fondly too. I was totally hooked and addicted, watching every week, every show, WWF, WCW. I didn't miss a second, watched all the pay-per-views. And it's a really good show, the Greetings from Allentown. Great stuff. And this week on episode 101, he's looking at WWF Superstars from October 1992. Hmm. So a totally different era for WWF. This was the episode where Doink the Clown first appears in the crowd. And what else happens? There was just a whole bunch of it was kind of an era of change. Bret Hart had just beat Flair for the world title. Ultimate Warrior was just about to leave. And Mr. Perfect would turn babyface. And yeah, there was a whole bunch of changes going down. And actually, you know, I was just as invested in this era WWF that I was in 1998 WWF. I was watching everything.
I was not.
No, and a lot of people weren't, but I was. A lot of it had to do with Bret Hart being the top dog. I mean, being Canadian, being from Calgary, that made it where I basically had like a home team to follow week after week. So that I've often said, if it wasn't for Bret Hart and lesser extent guys like Shawn Michaels, I would have totally checked out too, because there was a lot of garbage. But Doink the Clown, actually, heel Doink, played by Matt Bourne, is an amazing heel. Really great character if you go back and look at that stuff. The new military industrial suplex is a pretty special episode because Tom Batista is interviewing Billy Jack Haynes.
What?
Yeah. It just dropped as we speak on the feed.
Holy shit, I'm listening to that.
Yeah. It could be very interesting because Billy Jack has been a pretty controversial person since his wrestling career ended. So who knows? I mean, check it out.
Billy Jack said he could ask any question he wanted. So
question he wanted?
Yeah.
And Billy Jack, good thing they're not in. We're in studio. I'm listening to that. That should be at the top of everyone's list. That's my hey. That next time you ask me what my plugs are, that, because I can't wait to listen to that. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
That's an amazing get. That's fantastic.
Yeah, 115 minutes, almost 2 hours.
Oh boy!
Looks like it covers all kinds of stuff.
I'll bet it does.
His time in Portland, and then wasn't he like a bounty hunter later, or what did he do? Oh no, he was a. They'll talk about it on the show, but there'll be some crazy stories. but yeah, hey, look at us. We're getting big names now on the feed.
That's a get. People don't know how much of a get that is for a variety of reasons. So that's awesome. I can't wait to listen to that.
And Pete, what's happening on This Week in Wrestling?
The last one that we just dropped, we cover the current NXT show, NXT UK, the Ring of Honor, latest big Ring of Honor show. We discuss Ronda Rousey leaving WWE on Mania. Talk about the Trevor Lee Twitter comments from 2012. And a lot of a couple other things and stuff. So, that's what we pretty much cover. And then one we probably drop it in a couple of days. We'll be recapping, reviewing the NXT TakeOver show.
Groovy. Well, let's get to the main event then, boys.
The main event, we have the Iceman, King Parsons, versus Buddy, make it two, Jack Roberts. Make it a double. You know, this is important, kind of important match. Seeing if these guys can carry a segment. I want to say it was felt kind of was hit and miss. What'd you make of it, Kelly?
Well, I mean, overall, the angle that comes out of this is huge.
Yes.
Big time. I'd never seen this before, actually. I mean, I know the follow-up, but I hadn't seen the original angle.
This angle goes against everything our mothers taught us as kids, I will say that. Don't run with those scissors.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that.
It gets crazy. Starts out with Iceman on fire, multiple drop kicks, good struts, and he's dominating Buddy. Buddy's just stooging like a total pro. Awesome. Yeah. And it must have been really hot in the old barn that night, because both guys, especially Buddy, are just pouring sweat right from the first couple minutes of the match.
Yeah.
Roberts, of course, cheats to get the advantage, takes control. Iceman has a big comeback, and this leads to Michael Hayes interfering with scissors. And there's a struggle. Iceman gets the scissors at one point, and the crowd is just going bonkers because he's threatening to cut Hayes's hair, which would be the ultimate payoff of all time. And then Gordy comes out, multiple pile drivers, I think, or at least one on Iceman. And here we go, three on one. I make a note here. Where's the cavalry, for Christ's sakes? Mm. Poor Iceman gets some of his hair cut. And, of course, with his unique hairstyle, it's even more painful to have that cut off. And finally, the big hero of the day, Chris Adams, makes the save, but he's a little late. I guess he's still tending to Jose backstage, you know, that almost tragic thing that happened earlier. So he had to be a little late on the save. But anyway, yes, Adams is the one-man cavalry in the Sportatorium. And this was a pretty big angle, and it sets up what would be some pretty big drawing matches, I believe. And yeah, cool. This was unexpected. I didn't expect a haircutting angle to come out of it. That's what I love about watching this footage and you know, watching most of this stuff for the first time. And then you get surprises like this, like watching it live, basically. And
this is the precursor, because we're going to get the Freebird cream pretty damn soon.
Ooh, you know what? When you say Freebird cream, you really need to say, you need to see, because they always say Freebird hair cream. Because Freebird cream, no, thank you. No.
I can understand if you're going to be thinking of the gutter. So I understand that, John.
Gutter. I'm thinking of the, I'm not in the gutter, I'm thinking of the Freebirds. Ugh. And the Vanitors.
I felt the match went a little too long. I love the angle. But you're watching and you're like, these guys are actually doing these things with real fucking scissors out there. That's fucking nuts. I think they're better off when they're working like a 6-minute bomb fest. Here they had to work the headlock a little too long. And they were just sitting in it. But, you know, what can you say? They had to fill some time here. But it was definitely, it was a back burner for the angle, which is what it was about, and these guys will definitely come back on the big holiday show. What do you think of it, John?
Oh, I loved it, man. Again, it was an explosion of the, because everything else in the show was kind of hit or miss, to say the least, and but it's Buddy and Iceman, so, and this is the big kickoff of this, as Kelly said, so. And there was a cool little bit right at the beginning where the first offensive maneuver, Buddy hits a low drop kick before Iceman hits a drop kick. And Buddy's like, ha-ha, he hit him with a drop kick first. And then turns around into Iceman hitting 3 drop kicks in a row and Buddy Roberts spilling out over the fucking ropes. And I was like, it was a breath of fresh air. I was like, oh, we're wrestling, good wrestling. You know, these guys are good. And but then we got Bill. Bill was trying to explain just why Iceman is so popular with the crowd. And he says, Iceman's sincerity and his winning ways are why he's so popular. There's no enthusiasm.
No.
There's nothing. I enjoy the match. Freebirds come in. Fucking pop. Bill is appalled and shocked. No, not at the pile driver, but running with scissors. It's the only thing that's got him boiled up. He doesn't. He mentions this casually. He mentions that casually. But running with fucking scissors, my God, was he? He must have been yelled at by his mommy just terribly about that, and spanked on his little bottom because he is obsessed with that they were running with the fucking scissors, and we'll get to it in the time-filling thing at the end. But I was like, I didn't know where the Von Erichs were. I'm like, where the fuck are the Von Erichs? They come out like, we all love the Iceman. We love his groovy ways and dance moves. Where the fuck are you? Get the fuck out of here. Jesus fucking Christ. Yeah, you're a friend. Bill does call it like a terrorist attack. You know, I'm like, that was cool, but yeah, where the fuck are the Von Erichs helping out their quote unquote friend?
Yeah, another odd thing about this show was there's no promos.
No. And then they do this filling time thing. I guess we'll go to it. They got to
and then Bill ends up recapping both the big
entire fucking show. He goes. It started out there because the show started out routinely, and then we had a cannibal. And then Jose was devoured in the middle of the ring. And Kamala, who he has a reputation of a cannibal, and then he bit Jose's head. He's describing this with just, he's so nonchalant. And he does the same thing with a rundown of the Birds Iceman thing. It's all nonchalant. And I'm just like, what the fuck are they filling time for? And then he gets his ire up. They attacked not only the Iceman, but also David Manning as well. Fuck you. fuck you. Because not only was that dastardly, inhuman, and against the rules, it was totally dangerous to bring a pair of scissors with a number of people filing and flying about the ring. It's the only thing. He's shocked by the scissors. It's like, he sucks so bad. But why did he have to fill time like this? It's the strangest. Normally they have their shit together with this sort of thing.
Yeah, no, something wasn't right that night for whatever reason. Because the end was just total rambling time filler.
And normally you'd have the Freebirds coming on to cutting a fucking promo. Like,
exactly.
Or Ice. Something, yeah.
Why didn't you have the Freebirds waving the piece of hair going, we got you, Iceman, or something? What is this?
I don't know.
Yeah. Iceman 0, Freebirds 1, you know, some shit like that.
Exactly.
Other than that, I found the show very entertaining, though. I thought both angles really were hot and got over. And I thought it was also important to build without the Von Erichs, and I thought they did a great job there. Mm-hmm. What about you, Kelly, on the overall synopsis of it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, another easy watch. Other than Garvin and Bond, which was a sloppy mess. But whatever, that was at the beginning. Everything else was fine. It's building up Adams. Really good. I mean, he got 2 saves, a match, plus a T-segment with Bill Mercer.
Yeah, you know.
Man, it was totally all about Chris Adams on this show. Kamala, again, looks great. Iceman looks great. Big angle. Yeah. Oh, yeah. What's not to love about this? It was all good. Even with Mercer as one of the worst commentators of all time, it's still a great show.
Uh-huh.
Bill Noriega. What do you think, John?
Oh, I agree for all the same reasons. Like the good stuff I like, the attempts at trying to be, get shit done and then failing in an Ed Woodian way, I like. But it's still energetic. There's an energy behind it that we haven't seen, ever here. That's the momentum is there, and yeah, so that undercuts everything. And I enjoy, as much as I'll shit on stuff, I enjoy the TV right now so much. It's fun. I love great stuff to make fun of in the middle of all this cool stuff. You know, that's, to me, some of the fun of watching old wrestling.
Comedy! And there we are.
Oh, yeah.
Kelly, anything you want to plug, brother?
No.
Johnny Sorrow, anything you want to plug?
Just what I mentioned before in the live reads about the, what was the name of that show again, Kelly?
Military industrial suplex.
I haven't listened to it yet, but their interview with Billy Jack Haynes. That's my plug. I'm listening to it. So everyone, do what I fucking say.
There you go. Follow me on Twitter at Titans O Wrestling. Have a great week. Wrestle, watch wrestling. Good, bad, ugly, pretty, sad, smelly, whatever. Laters.
My heartaches and troubles are just up and gone. The moment that you come in view, and with your hand in mine, dear, I could dance on and on, and I could waltz across Texas with you. Waltz across Texas with you. Texas with you, like a storybook ending, I'm lost in your charms, and I could waltz across Texas with you.